Given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami Maharaj on June 21st, 1981 in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia.
Here they came to Mayapur, but I'm also initiating in Chile, Peru, and Bolivia. In Latin America, South America, as well as the southeastern United States.
That's a pretty wide area.
So I visit there, and I'm also initiating. Those are my fixed where I visit regularly, but I visit 2-3 times a year. I make a world tour. So then I have disciples also in Canada, different parts.
Each temple. Each congregation, for instance, anywhere, or being in India, or wherever else, are they independent of each other? Or, is there some sort of a link in the sense that financially
and managerially, each temple is like an autonomous unit, but then there's like an overall supervision of those. Each country is separately registered and managed. But then just to see that overall the standard is the same. So then there are different commissioners who are responsible to a central body called the Governing Body Commission. There's 24 members. Like the Governing Body Commissioner for Malaysia is Hansaduda Swami. And I'm for Thailand and India like that. And then some of the areas I'm joint with another one. Some places I'm exclusive. And apart from that is the issue of who is spiritual master. Anyone can accept initiation from anyone that they have faith in, who is the authorized spiritual master. But generally the person to whom one gets more teaching from or to whom one develops faith, that is the one that one accepts the initiation from. So generally the local, whoever is a local person that's coming more often, naturally one will gain faith. So that's generally what happens. But like Bhima, he's the disciple of Kirtanananda Swami, who is our new Vrindavana, which is world famous in West Virginia, that palace. So he made that. Right now, I'm all right. You're nervous. You're biting your fingernails.
No, usually I think of more questions. I usually do that. It's not an inspiration.
You see, what we do is we have beads and we chant on our beads. And that's more of an inspiration. Because that hooks us like hooking in the plug into the current. When you hook the plug into the socket, then that gives one direct connection with the powerhouse. So we grab onto our beads and start to chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Then Krishna gives us intelligence.
When you chant, your mind is always at it? Does it ever roll?
In the beginning, the mind goes here and there. And one has to, just like a little puppy dog running here and there. And you have to bring the mind back to chanting. And then, you see, in the beginning I could remember that there were times when I could be chanting and my mind would think of other things. And although I was chanting so many beads, my mind would be going. You know, but then I would gradually, Prabhupada trained that we had to bring our mind back. See, and now when I chant, I can't do anything else. If I chant, I can't think of anything else. If I start thinking of something else, I'll stop counting on the beads automatically. And if I'm trying to make some other program or thing, someone's chanting, immediately my mind will be drawn to that chanting. As soon as I hear Krishna's name, my mind fixes. And somehow it just comes. Of course, practice makes perfect. By practice, that will happen.
This mind
Of course, that's the point, is that no one can control the mind. Mind is very difficult to control. But by chanting, the mind becomes under control by Krishna's mercy. So the best way of controlling the mind is to regulate one's activities. By regulating, then the mind can gradually be brought under control, and by chanting, the mind becomes purified. If one starts to stop, I won't act anymore. How? Just like sometimes a baby, when you try to feed the baby food, if you ever seen those who are mothers or fathers, that when the baby is being spoon-fed sometime, he'll just go like that, I won't eat. But how long he can hold, and he finally can't hold, and shove him. So like that, someone will say that, no, I won't anymore act materially. I'll just stop all action. How is it possible? Then as soon as one finally, that when can no longer hold, then they fall down. Like that, great yogis, they simply do very great austerities. But then when the temptation comes, at one point, they give in. So we're living in a world where there's always so many temptations. So the thing is that in Krishna consciousness, it's more powerful. One doesn't have to stop, you see, eating, doesn't have to stop sleeping, or doesn't have to stop having children. But these things have to be regulated. Others, they're not regulated. If one sleeps too much, eats too much, or doesn't have any regulation in mating, then what happens is that gradually one becomes more and more the mind becomes uncontrollable. So therefore, if one practices regulation and chants, regulation alone is not enough, but also chanting, associating with Vaishnavas, with great devotees, taking Krishna prasad, and these things, they give us a taste. We have to develop as a higher taste. The higher taste is there, but we've lost it. So as we get a little purified, as the mirror of our consciousness becomes cleansed, then we can actually taste what is spiritual bliss. And when we get a taste of spiritual bliss, then it's not difficult to control the mind. You see. Just like if someone's eating in a hotel, I don't know, in India they call hotel, restaurant. What do you say, restaurant?
Both.
Then if someone says, well, your hotel is not very good, it's not so clean, and the food is actually third rate, you should try this other for the same price, it's very good. And you go to the other restaurant, and you find that it's a very high quality but cheap rate, then easily you give up the old place and come to the new place, because it's a better food. So in the same way, if one develops, if one experiences a higher pleasure, has that higher taste, then the mind is automatically controlled, doesn't think about the Lord. So in the beginning, before one gets that higher experience, there's an interim period where one has regulation and does practice. As she said, practice makes perfect, you see. And then as one gets purified and actually experiences a higher taste, then it's no longer a forced thing, it's spontaneous. That is the beginning of spontaneous devotion. So we are always hankering, when will my devotion become spontaneous? When it doesn't have to be forced by the intelligence. I don't have to force my mind, but the mind will automatically come. So that comes with abhyas, with practice. Not that the practice is, it's not an acquired thing. But the practice of devotional service purifies our consciousness, and then finally this spontaneous devotion comes by mercy of Guru and Krishna. Is that all right?
I'm so curious. You said I've also read that there should be regulation in mating. This is rather a curious question that I have in mind. The thing is, we regulate mating, but this means that the only time it's supposed to indulge in mating is for the purpose of bearing children, otherwise you stay. Or does it mean that in the married state you can mate at any time that you wish, and respected whether you want to have children as a result of that or not? What does regulate mating mean then?
Well, there's different stages of advancement. So, some people, they want to finish up their business. I mean, by finishing up their business, want to make this lifetime the last life. Now, we've been here in this material world for a long time, going through so many births and rebirths. And if someone is determined that in this lifetime I want to complete my material life and go back to God, go back to the spiritual sky, and to realize fully my spiritual nature, that is a very great determination. So the followers of Shankaracharya, they were always saying that to do that, one would have to be a sannyasi, which means complete abstention from any mating at all, any association with women. You see, but of course Shankaracharya and our sampradaya, Madhvacharya, Gaudiya, we are a little bit opposed when we get to the highest understanding. We agree both that one should get out of the material world, and we agree that the absolute truth is fully spiritual. But he's an impersonalist, and we believe beyond the impersonal truth there is the spiritual personality of Krishna, which is the foundation of the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. So because Krishna's qualities are so attractive and so wonderful, that it's not necessary that one has to be a sannyasi, as Shankaracharya said, but one has to be a different type of a dedicated devotee. That's a different type of sannyas, you can say, but not the physical sannyas exactly that Shankaracharya had recommended. So there are some devotees who are not determined that they want to finish up the life, make this the last life. So for such devotees who do not want to necessarily, do not have that determination that this should be my last life, then they chant Hare Krishna and they follow married life, and they may not follow such a strict regulation in their mating. They just are married, and so the license is there that when you're married you can have mating with your husband. That's according to religious principle. But what happens is that, of course, very strong attachments grow there, and the taste for spiritual life is very difficult to get when there's this type of unrestricted mating, even within marriage. So for someone who is determined that I want this life to be the last life, then it is recommended that if one is able to, of course it's very difficult, but if one is able simply to mate only for procreation, that means that at the particular time of the month when procreation is ideal, you see, then one, in spite of that mating, doesn't have to fear that the person will not go back to Krishna in this life. That if one is chanting the 16 times Hare Krishna every day, 16 rounds, taking Krishna prasadam, and only mating at the opportune time of the month with the husband for the, or wife, whatever it may be, for the procreation. So then these things are not impediments. Krishna says that I am sex life according to religious principles. Dharma abarude maitun aham, Krishna says in the Gita. So very few, even the very strictest of religious families, very few actually follow that type of a strict regulation on mating is a fact. And so, of course, they are still devotees and they are making some advancement. But the danger is that at the time of death, instead of thinking of Krishna, one will be thinking of the wife or the husband and again have to take another birth. At least whatever amount of Krishna conscious activities they perform will always stand by their side. They never lose that. And it may be that after a period of just a couple of years, even they will also be able to become stronger spiritually and develop a more mature outlook. Sometimes it's just different phases. So we encourage everyone to chant, to follow taking Krishna prasadam. But if one has got the determination that in this life, husband and wife, we are going to have Krishna conscious child. I don't want a son or a daughter who is going to be a demon or going to be a non-devotee or just some type of product of lust. That if the husband and wife pray to Krishna, you see, before conception, for having a Krishna conscious child, you see, and then this is called the Garbhodan Sanskara, which was previously the system for all higher caste members of the Vedic culture. And in that type of a very, as an offering, that is that the child, we want to make this child as an offering to Krishna. When the child is born, we want that this child will be trained in religious principles, will be given the best possible chance to become a pure devotee of Krishna. With this type of consciousness then, naturally in their affection, but as a devotion, then they have their conception. And if a child is born from that conception, then they feel the obligation to raise that child in Krishna consciousness or God consciousness. So what happens is the soul, you see, that takes shelter of the womb at the time of conception is attracted according to the mentality of the husband and the wife. So naturally, if there's just a regular type of informal mating or whatever you like to call it, then the basic mentality would not be so much in a religious mood, but it would be, or even so much in a type of mood which is, you see, tinged with a God-conscious purpose, but basically just lusty. And so naturally that would attract a lusty type of a soul into the womb. And so in this way, one may have children, they're not so bright or so intelligent. In Australia, in America, in different places, the school board inspectors have come by and they said that our children in Krishna consciousness are generally 2 to 3 grades above their contemporaries in the other school, that they're more well-mannered, they're more intelligent, they learn quickly, they appear to be more quick and bright-faced. They actually recorded this. It was on TV in Australia. I don't know if you have the video here. You don't have. Oh, so they gave all these certificates. So this may also be due to the Krishna conscious mating. So just like leaving the body is a science, also giving birth is a science. So to give birth to a nice child, you see, that means that at that moment, whatever the consciousness of the husband and wife, that's the type of soul will take shelter. So if one has purified consciousness, that's possible if it's regulated at a particular time. But if it's just a spontaneous kind of thing, whenever the urge is there to do it, then naturally you can't say what type of child will take shelter. So these are the various kind of intricacies. One part is that the child that does come, that is a real planned child, because actually the planning is done through prayer and through a spiritual type of determination. And the other part is the determination not to place that mating as the goal of life or as the highest pleasure in life, that is a temporary thing, which naturally is a natural need we have or a natural impulse which is there. It's also an exchange of affection, but the real higher affection and higher exchange we want to develop is our love with God. So not to become overly attached to something which is not the ultimate goal. So therefore it's recommended to regulate for someone who is determined that he wants to get out in this one life. But if someone doesn't have that determination yet, cannot practice such a, because it's difficult, cannot practice such a abstention to simply mate at once a month as is recommended. Still one should chant Hare Krishna and read the books and try to develop in other respects as much as possible. Maybe later on in this life the determination will come. Hopefully there will still be enough time at that time to be successful. It's not like some kind of fanatic, dogmatic thing. It's a very practical, you know, when I was in Latin America, and then one newspaper reporter woman, she asked the same question. Did we hear that you only allow of your initiated people sex life once in a month? And I said, yes, but you can have as many children as you want. She said, well, I don't want any children, she said. She was a very, modern woman. I don't want any children. And then she said, you don't take any intoxication, no drinking, no cigarettes, no marijuana. You don't take any meat, fish, or eggs. You don't gamble. She said, what else is there in life? She said, everything is gone. I said, not quite everything. Don't we seem to be very happy people? She said, well, then she put in the newspaper, Kosi dos netros Krishna espiritualidad, which means that Kosi means almost, dos means two, metros means meters, of Krishna espiritualidad means spirituality. He said, to give a picture of me and said, is 2 meters of spirit, Krishna spirituality. That says, then he said that they don't do this, they don't gamble, no meat eating, no, except for very regulated, no sex life and no intoxication. He says, therefore it must be spiritual, there's nothing else left. No, but you see, we offered nice food stuff to Krishna. You see, the devotees, they wear nice clothing, nice facility. We chant Hare Krishna. That's our, you can say, that's our intoxication. That's everything, you see. And as far as gambling, whole life is a gamble at every moment. Why put further risk? You walk down the street, it's a gamble. So we don't need to gamble because we're placing ourselves in Krishna's hand. We don't need the type of artificial thrills. Life itself is a big enough of a thrill for us, because we actually see how Krishna is helping us and protecting us. But so it's a very big jump for these people in the West to understand these things. It's even a very modern Indian and Indian, even the Hindus, it's very difficult for them nowadays to understand these things. So we have a program where we encourage people at least to start chanting, to start to practice. And hopefully in this life they'll develop a higher taste. Everyone likes to say, well, when I get older. But of course, by that time, if we don't start practicing now, when we get older, then it's already too late. You know, we already developed so many bad habits. Like Prahlad Maharaj, you know Prahlad? He was the 5-year-old boy, very famous in Indian culture. He was the son of a great demon, Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu, Hiranya means gold and Kashipu means soft beds. And that's what he was. He performed a very strict tapasya. For 100 years he stood up on 1 foot or 2 feet with his arms in the air. And practically he was, it was in a previous age where one could still stay alive as long as the willpower was there. So his life had gone right into his bones. And actually his flesh, everything was being eaten by ants, everything. But still he was standing there determined. So finally Lord Brahma came and sprinkled water from his pot, his Kamandalu pot, and he was given a form. Again, very strong, beautiful body. And Brahma said that, what do you want? You're doing this very strict penance. He said, I want to be immortal. Give me immortality. And he said, but I am not immortal. How can I give you what I don't have? And then he said, but Brahma, we heard that you are immortal. People say you are Amor. Well, they say I am Amor because by their calculation my life is so long. But take my word for it is that I also eventually die, even though it's after millions and millions of years. So then he said that, give me this boon then, that I can't be killed by a demigod or by a man or by an animal, that I can't be killed at the daytime or at night. I can't be killed on the land, in the sky, or in the water. Like this, he made so many conditions. So that way he figured, well, and this is why I'm immortal, because I can't be killed by any of these things. So actually he conquered all the demigods. He became the controller of the whole universe. And many, in the previous age, in the Satya Yuga, millions of years ago, in the Puranas, the history is there. So while he was meditating, while he was doing this tapasya, he was an atheist in a real sense. His wife was pregnant, but the child was Prahlad. And Prahlad is actually a great devotee of Krishna. So the demigods, they saw that his wife was pregnant. They captured the wife. As soon as the child was born, they were going to kill. Because they thought, we already have this one great demon. So that if we have another demon, it's be too much. So we better kill him while we have the chance. But then Narad, he stopped and said, no, don't kill. He's actually a great devotee. And while in the womb of the mother, Narada Muni was giving teachings. And after a certain time, when we're in the womb, we become conscious. After 7 months, 6-7 months, the baby in the womb starts to become conscious. And at that time has a very clear intelligence, can even remember sometimes 100 births in the past. But it's very uncomfortable, they're kicking around, it's very difficult. So at that time, Narada Muni instructed the whole science of Krishna consciousness to the mother, but actually to the baby in the womb. So the mother, she forgot later on, unfortunately, but Prahlad never forgot. So right from his birth, he was always chanting. So when his father got this power, came back, and he established his dominion over the universe, then he tried to educate his son in materialism, but his son was already, you can say, poisoned by Krishna consciousness from before birth. So when he said that you should learn all, he learned everything, but he said, what's the use of all these things? You want to teach me how to simply make profit and how to exploit, but ultimately the proprietor is Krishna. And his father would get furious and say, don't say this, I'm the proprietor, see my power, I don't believe in God and all these things. And so in this way, there was always a conflict between the father and the son. So when he sent his son, he gave to his two teachers, said, I want you to brainwash him, I want you to deprogram him, I want you to make him into a complete, you see, materialist. And they take him to school and train him. But as soon as the teachers would leave, he stood up on the teacher's desk and told all the children, come on, I want you all to chant Hare Krishna. And they say, now we don't want to chant. Now we're children, we want to play. This is recess. And he says, no, you're saying you're 5 years old, it's not time. But first 10 years of your life, first half your life you waste sleeping. And the first 10 years of your life you're going to just be like this, you know, no intelligence, just running around. Next 10 years you're going to play sports, education, so many things. Then from 20 till 40, 50, 60, then you have the whole family affairs. You have running after the family life. So there you're going to be completely absorbed. In the last 20 years, you're old, you have rheumatism, arthritis, this, that, so many problems, you're not feeling very energetic, teeth are falling out, whatever, lose your eyesight. So all these things are there. The last 20 years, you're not going to be very energetic. So where is the time? considering this, then where is the time? So therefore, even now at 5 years of age, you have to start chanting. I said, Kumara Macharupa, get right from Kumar voice, right from 5 years, begin now. You see. So then he convinced them all, they all started chanting. And then the teachers came in, saw everyone was chanting. He said, the king's going to cut off my head. You're all chanting God's name, I'm going to be killed. So he dragged Prahlad in, gave him to the king. Hiranyakashipu said, your son is creating this problem. So then he tried to kill his son in so many ways. He said, all right, take him and throw him in boiling oil. They threw him in boiling oil, but by Krishna's mercy, he was swimming in the boiling oil. It didn't burn him. They threw him in a pit of snakes. The snakes crawled around his neck, and he was playing with him, but they didn't bite him. He was always chanting Hare Krishna. Then they took him, and they held him over a cliff. He said, where is your Krishna going to save you now? He says, Krishna is always there protecting me. His five-year-old son, he became so envious that you don't accept me as God. You say that this Krishna is God, that there's some other God than me. So then he said, you deny God. Otherwise, I cast you in this huge, over the cliff, you know, thousands of feet drop. He says, what do you say? They said, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. Damn you! Through the other attempts failed. Then Hiranyakashipu, he thought that let me trick him. He came in, I'll poison him. So he came in and told his son, actually you haven't eaten for a long time and it's been very... After all, a son is a son. You know, you shouldn't keep any grudges. So here I brought you some sweet... Just take this laddu, this sweet. And he gave him the sweet. Of course, Prahlad was wondering that my father is so envious. How can I trust him? And he prayed to Krishna anyway, that I can't... How can I accept this food unless it's been offered to you? He said, of course, his father, oh, yeah, this is prasad, don't worry. He said, how can I accept unless I know this is offered to you? Unless you personally come and eat it, then how can I accept? So then Krishna came, and Krishna took a bite. And when Krishna took a bite, then all the poison was destroyed. And then Krishna personally fed Prahlad. He was so affectionate with Prahlad. Of course, then again, Hiranyakashipu's plan was foiled. So then he came personally to kill Prahlad. He said, "Where I'm going to now personally kill you with my own sword. Who is going to save you now? Where is your Krishna? My Krishna is everywhere. Where is your Vishnu?" He said. When he said he was everywhere, he said, "Is he here in this column?" And there was a column. He said, "Yes, he's there also." So Hiranyakashipu became so angry, he took his sword and smashed the column. He was so strong, like so many elephants. But even that column broke at that point. All of a sudden there was a huge roar, which shook the whole universe. In fact, the different planetary residents, they thought that the whole universe was coming to an end. Such a sound they'd never heard. It vibrated up and down, in and out, everywhere. This huge vibration. Krishna says in Gita that I am the sound in ether. That when Krishna wants to vibrate, he can create such a vibration that vibration can just shatter everything. So that sound representation of all pervasiveness, Krishna manifested. And then he came out in this half lion, half man. I gave a short talk today about half man. That's Nrsimha Dev. And he fought with this Hiranyakashipu and picked him and just tore him in half. So he had this atheist had all these plans. I can't be killed in the land, in the sea, or in the water. I can't be killed by day or by night. I can't be killed by man, animal, or demigod. So, of course, Krishna is neither man, animal, or demigod. And he had half man, half animal form. So Hiranyakashipu couldn't figure if he was an animal or a man or what he was. And he killed him just at the twilight. So there wasn't day or night. It was right in between. And he also didn't kill him on the land, in the sea, or on the water. He killed him on his lap. And this way, everything, he got the benediction from a demigod, Brahma, but because he was offending his devotee, so Krishna, he always protects. He says, Name bhakta binashyati, my devotee will never perish. You see, someone who surrendered to Krishna, Krishna, he'll never let that devotee perish. So, Like that, the demons, they always try to use their intelligence how to escape, but they always get defeated. So better to use the intelligence how to take shelter of Krishna, like Prahlad. So Prahlad, he advised that we should practice right from now, whether we are a student, or whether we're married, or whether we're unmarried, or whatever we may be. Even if we're old or young, from this point, anyway, we've neglected up to now, but from this point on, we should take the determination, whatever remaining time, to try to become Krishna conscious. It may be that there's still enough time in this life to finish. You see. So Prahlad said, even if one's 5 years old, he should begin. What do you think of that story? You didn't hear that before?
A few months ago, we had a play here based on that story. We had a very good half line out, man.
Oh, that was last year.
Last year? No, this year. It's a very long time. A few months back, right?
So you've been coming regularly for many months?
Yeah.
Very nice. Any other questions?
Who was Arjuna worshipping before Lord Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to him?
Krishna?
Spoke Bhagavad Gita to him.
Arjuna always worshipped Krishna.
Because my brother asked me that who was Arjuna worshipping before Lord Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to him.
He was Krishna's friend. Before the Gita was spoken, there was the 14 years of, what do you call it? Exile. Vanavas. And during that time, they depended on Krishna. Before that, when they were in Hastinapur, half the kingdom was ruled by the Kauravas and half by the Pandavas. And at that time, from Dwarka, Krishna visited in the palace of Lord Krishna. You take the towel down? We don't mind, eavesdroppers. Window peeping during darshan is allowed.
You can't ask questions.
Huh?
You can't ask
questions. No, since they're outside, they have to
live
in the inside, you
can ask the question. Yes. Krishna visited them in Hastinapur then. It was only a momentary. Krishna used his devotee as an example. So he had Arjuna show those weaknesses so he could speak the Gita to him. But actually Arjuna, you see, Krishna had him come down in consciousness just for that, like a dramatic performance, to give the Gita. Otherwise, Arjuna was always in that higher position.
I understand that there are four yugas, and after the end of Kali Yuga, the first yuga will come on again.
You're going? Here, take a are you going now? Make a little path. Hare Krishna.
Yes? I was just asking a question. There are four yugas, right? But end of Kali Yuga, the first yuga will come on again. Is it true?
Yes. It's a cycle.
It's a cycle. So everything will go on again.
Cycle of 4,320,000 years.
Again, 4,320,000 years.
The Satya Yuga is four parts. Four tenths. Treta Yuga is three tenths. Dwapara Yuga is two tenths. And Kali Yuga is one tenth. 4, 3, 2, 1. So 4, 3, 2, 1 is equal to 10. So the total, Kali Yuga is 432,000 years, and the total, four yugas, is 4,320,000 years. And such, there's 1,000 such cycles in one day of Brahma. That's why Brahma is called as Amor, because he's living so much, such a long time. By our standard, he's immortal, but he's not. He dies also.
What happens to him when he dies?
Well, if he's a devotee, he goes back to Krishna. Otherwise, if not, he has to again come down. It says that if a Lord Brahma is not desirous of entering in Krishna's devotional service, then he also has to again come down. Abrahma bhuvana loke punarvatino arjuna mam upecheta kuntaya punarjanmana vidyate. Even one goes up to Brahma loka, again has to come down if one doesn't take shelter of Krishna. But mam upecheta kuntaya, one who takes shelter of me, Krishna says, punarjanmana vidyate, he doesn't again take rebirth.
So why should there be this demigods?
Huh?
Why should there be these demigods?
Why should there be? No, you have a president in this country? Prime Minister? You have Prime Minister?
We have Prime.
And you have ministers?
Yes, we have.
So why have Prime Minister and ministers? You already have king?
Because the Prime Minister's capacity is limited, you see, but Krishna's capacity is
no, so therefore he has energies. His capacity is that he has energies. Because the king or because the prime minister has other ministers, that doesn't necessarily mean that he wasn't able to do those different departments also. Even if he may not be able to do all of them, Krishna could expand himself to do all the different roles, just like sometimes there's not a suitable Brahma or a suitable Indra. So he also takes those positions. If there's no suitable jiva or living entity to do that, take that post, then he may also incarnate and take that post. No, it doesn't cause a lot of doesn't.
Because we tend to follow them, you see.
Krishna.
Yeah, that it's a universal position. You see, you can also become a demigod. Of certain, you can't never become a Shiva. You can never, because Shiva is not ordinary demigod. He's an expansion of Vishnu. But other demigods like Brahma, Varuna, Indra, that a living entity can become. You see, it's a post. And so if there's a qualified soul, then the soul can get that birth. And then it gets a lot of material power. So naturally one realizes that this material power is also destroyed when the universe is destroyed. When this universe is destroyed, then the demigods, the post, the power, everything is destroyed, including our bodies. So what is the use of worshipping someone whose power is also going to be destroyed? Better to worship Krishna, who is the source of all the power. So Narada Muni, he criticized Vyasadeva that why did you give so many different types of worship in the Vedas? It's very confusing for the common people. You should now simply write one literature which is giving the pure path, which has nothing to do with materialism. And at that time, then Vyasadeva wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam. That is known as the Nirmalam, as the pure Shastra, or the Kalpa Briksha, the desire tree, the ripened fruit, Nigam Kalpa Taru, the Phalam, the ripened fruit of the desire tree of the Vedas. So, because different living entities have material desires, and just by our own endeavor, it's very difficult to get those desires. So Krishna, he has demigods who are managing the universe, so he showed how one can approach these demigods, which are shortcuts to material power. But of course, one can say, well, because we get distracted from this, we get distracted from the real purpose of life. Why did he do that? But Krishna, that's his liberalness, that if someone doesn't want to come back to him, he doesn't force them. He gives them so many alternatives. That's why we say the Guru is more kind than Krishna. Krishna gives so many alternatives. He told Arjuna, you can fight or you cannot fight, you can surrender or not surrender. He's inviting. But the Guru, he's saying, no, you should surrender. You shouldn't worship demigods for material objectives. You should directly approach Krishna and achieve the perfection of life. So the devotees of Krishna are more kind than Krishna in one sense, that they don't... Krishna, he's taking a very neutral position. Although he recommends unequivocally that if you surrender to me, I'll deliver you. And if you surrender to the demigods, then you'll go to them, you won't come to me. He says that, that, that those who surrender to the demigods, they don't come to me. They go to the demigods. Devan devayajo yanti madbhakto yanti mamapi. Devayajo, the worshippers of the devas, devayanti, they go to the devas. Madbhakto yanti mamapi, and my devotees, my worshippers, they come to me. So Krishna says the absolute truth. He doesn't hide it. But he's also giving that alternative. While the pure devotees of Krishna, they directly say that you should directly surrender to Krishna. That is your best choice.
In the beginning, you see, when Sattva Yuga, this millions of years ago,
yes,
people were all good. Then how did this rebirth and how did material contamination enter into the Sattva Yuga? And how did, why only some people had to be reborn, born again, taking?
In Sattva Yuga, most of the souls get liberation.
Then in which yuga? Only in Kali Yuga you're saying material contamination?
No, what happens is that just like in Satya Yuga, Hiranyakashipu was there. But there was one Hiranyakashipu. You see, but today, such type of atheists are many.
No, what I mean is, there was a point when...
If this material nature is by nature static, that means that its tendency is to always degrade. So Krishna comes and he puts everything back up to the standard of Satya Yuga, and then gradually it disintegrates. So in each yuga, there's good and bad qualities. Like now in Kali Yuga, you can say now it's very degraded, people are atheistic, they have bad habits, short memory, so many difficulties are there. You see, ocean of faults. But at the same time, there's one very good quality, that in Satya Yuga, to achieve God consciousness, one had to spend maximum time at it. But in this Kali Yuga, if one even just uses short life, 50, 60 years, if one dedicates himself, chants Hare Krishna, not very difficult, chants Hare even in the home, becomes Krishna conscious. Then in this short life, one can go back to Krishna.
So we are born again just because we sin?
Because we have material desires, we're given chance to satisfy those.
That's what I'm like, there was a beginning.
Yes.
In the beginning, everybody were good. How were people...
No, even in Satya Yuga, even they're good, their stump sin is there. It's just very little.
Why did they have to be born like that? In the beginning, why did they have to be born like that?
You see, what is sin? Do you know what sin is?
Sin is being bad.
Away from religious principles.
Yeah, you see, sin means that that is the accumulation of vikarma, or bad reactions which are coming. When we do something which is against a religious principle or which is against nature, against our own self-interest, that means it's harmful to ourselves and to others. So by performing such an act, the reaction for that comes to us in the future, we have to suffer. If we perform a pious activity or something according to religious principle, that means that then we get material happiness. In which case we also have to be in the world to enjoy the material happiness. So Krishna consciousness is a science of how not only to transcend sin or vikarma, reactions which are painful, but also how to transcend punya, or reactions which are pleasant. Because in this material world, even if one, just like if one wins the lottery, he still has to wait in line to get his money. You know, even if you get some material happiness, there's always some misery that comes with it. So originally when we come into the material world, once we start acting materially, whether according to religious principles or against, that will give us our relative position in the material happiness, either as a demigod if we're very religious, or as a dog or a cat or animal if we're irreligious, or as a very unhappy human being. You see, then we have to suffer the reactions. So this Krishna consciousness is how to get freed from those reactions.
But why did God have to create, like, I mean, He could have, if He wanted to have a very nice atmosphere in the world, why should He create?
No, He has a nice atmosphere in the spiritual world, and He wants you to go there. But you don't want to go where He already has a nice atmosphere. And the way that there can be a nice atmosphere is when everyone is in harmony. And the only way everyone can be in harmony is one is God conscious, when one wants to serve God. But if everybody wants to serve, just like I may say, I want my happiness and he wants his happiness, but our happinesses are conflicting. Just like someone may say that I want to enjoy this woman and someone say I want to enjoy her, then there's conflict. Someone is saying that this island is my country's property and the other country is saying, no, it's my country's property. There's a conflict. So in the material world, everyone wants to enjoy, but there's conflict. Because
all Krishna's action, isn't it?
No, he gives them...
Being pulled by ropes.
Not like that. Not like that. They have independence to decide what to do, what not to do. Some minute independence is there. Otherwise, there's no meaning of sin and pious activity. Then Krishna wouldn't spend so much time telling Arjuna to surrender to him. Then it would have been just automatic. We do have some independence, some minute deciding factor. A person can decide whether to steal or not to steal. But the strings are pulling on him why? Because in a previous life he was thinking that if I stole this thing, I'd be happy. So that pulling is there. But by willpower, a person can overcome that if he has a good association. But generally, a person simply follows whatever the desires were in the previous life. So these subtle desires are what are pulling us. So it's not that Krishna is pulling. But as we are desiring in this life, when we die, so many things we thought that, well, if I had a color TV, I would have been happy. If I would have had a bigger car, I would have been happy. If I would have had a bigger house. So then next life we get a chance for bigger house, bigger car, if we've done such activity to deserve it. It might be that we get a big birdhouse and be a bird if we are very sinful. That we can't say, but we get a chance to satisfy those desires. So because we originally, somehow or another, we were given a choice, and at that time we didn't know Krishna, we didn't know Him at that time. So because we decided not Krishna, out of our ignorance, we decided that I want to be the enjoyer, I want to myself try to enjoy. So somehow we've come into this material world. And so then Krishna, He gives us the opportunity to enjoy, but we get entangled. And so sometimes we rise up in the material world, kabe swarga uthaya, kabe naraka dubaya. And sometimes we come down into the hellish existence. Sometimes we are birds and animals, sometimes we are human beings. Sometimes we are a king and sometimes we are a citizen. So we're wandering around. But Krishna is always coming and saying, come back. This material world can only be made a perfect place if everybody became a devotee, but it's very hard to make everyone a devotee in this material world. If it's at all possible, it'll be only possible by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. But the thing is that after the devotees die in this world, then they go back to Krishna Loka. See, this world is a place of suffering. Good night, thank you. Please take a cookie, if you like.
Just had the stuff.
So this is a dessert.
Bring back.
You're another one of our fiery inquirers. Hare Krishna. It's not that Krishna is so cruel that he's putting us here. He doesn't want us to stay here, but we are so stubborn, we don't want to go. He's saying, you come back. He's saying, you come back. But then we're saying, well, it's like we've fallen into the ocean and someone is coming to save us and throws the rope. And we're saying that, well, why did I fall in here anyway? This is all your fault. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Krishna doesn't want us to be here, but he's not forcing that we have to serve him. Otherwise, where's the question of service? He wants us to love him. So love means that it has to be voluntary. Right? I was discussing this yesterday. That love means voluntary. So that means we have to have a choice, otherwise it's not voluntary. If there's no choice, then it's mechanical. There's not voluntary. So we made a wrong choice. So now we should try to go back to Krishna.
Some of my friends posed the question telling me, if everyone were to follow Krishna consciousness, then there is a lot of unemployment and vulnerabilities, because there won't be any criminals, there won't be any teachers, so many other things. So there will be a lot of unemployment.
Yeah. In other words, if the prison house is closed, then how the government will go on? But so far we never heard anyone raise such a problem. So many millions of dollars are being spent on prison houses. So if there's no prisoners, then the government won't find other uses to spend the money. But there will always be some criminals in this material world. You don't have to worry. You see. But of course they'll reduce. But you'll always find a few candidates. You see, even we found that in this material world, that's why this material world, because it means that there's always two kinds of people, criminal and faithful, demon and demigod. So sometimes the demon come on top and sometimes the demigods come on top. So devotees, they're transcendental. They're not exactly the demigods, although they appear to be like demigods. But devotee means that he's actually pure desire, not even to enjoy the material world, he just wants to please Krishna. Demigod means he wants to enjoy material world, but he wants to be faithful to God. And the demon wants to enjoy, but he's envious of God. So there will always be a few demons to be in the prison house, but hardly any. You see, when in the Dwarpa Yuga, after they did the sacrifice, it said that Yudhisthira, he just laid all the gold and everything in one heap, you see, by the side of the palace. And then after a few years, they wanted to again do another sacrifice. Then they went looking, where's the gold? And they found it still there. So nowadays, if you put your Parker pen down for a minute, you go back, in 1 minute it's gone. In those days, they had a few tons of gold, they left it, they came back, it's still there, no one touched it. It wasn't their gold. So definitely that type of consciousness can be there. This is a foolish thing if we say that, well, if the criminals stop, they will lose so many jobs. That means you don't have to waste so many people for crime fighting. They can grow rice or they can chant Hare Krishna. Nature will provide so many other ways. This is not a problem. But that will be a long time. You'll find there will always be a few criminals. But it will reduce. What happens then, when the good people become stronger, then the criminals get afraid. Just like if a criminal tries to rob and then all the people all jump on him, you see, then they get afraid. So when the good people start becoming stronger, when more criminals are converted to good people also, then the remaining criminals, they become a little bit afraid because they're outnumbered. So it's late, I guess everyone should go home now. Unless you have any more urgent questions. You don't count. You're a devotee. No, you can ask in the morning when I give the morning class. This is the Sunday night special. So you have so many questions, now you'll have to come more often than on Sunday.